and the fact that it's super dry. Anybody that's kept on with it will understand why. Super dry is a super cool clothing brand. They probably close super dry for some reason. Very expensive clothing, so that's what I called this morning.
Microphone man.
I have the voice. I have the power. Right, so I've called this morning's sermon Super Dry for that reason, because I'm going to talk about God quenching our thirst this morning. Another title that I could have called it, which I thought might be a bit too extreme, but I'll say it anyway, Slap the Stone, hence the stone. So I'm going to look at, first of all, two instances with Moses, which you'll know about really well, and then I'm going to look at a few other verses of scripture from the Old Testament. A lot of people think that maybe the Old Testament isn't relevant these days, but God says all scripture is relevant and suitable and profitable, you know, and for teaching and for building us up. And I have no doubt that the Old Testament is just as important as the New Testament, because it gives the foundation of Christian living there. Yeah. So we're going to look at everything is in the Old Testament this morning. I've not finished Joseph yet, but I just need to do this in between. First of all, this morning, I'd just like a volunteer, someone who's really thirsty. Is anybody who's thirsty this morning, whose throat is quite dry, who could benefit from a nice drink of cool Harrogate spring water? Stephen's going to volunteer them. It is cool, this. It came out of our freezer, our fridge as well, so it's still quite cold. All you have to do is describe the feeling that comes after you've drunk that, or you don't have to. You don't have to drink it all. No, you just have as much as you feel that you need to quench your thirst, and then tell me. There's nothing wrong with it. It's perfect in every way. You've just broke the seal there, and you describe to these people what sort of that feels like.
Feels good, nice and cold. Quenches your thirst, as you said.
Thank you.
Does what it says on the thing.
Is it going down?
Yeah. So, someone who's really thirsty and they have a drink of nice, cool, fresh water, it's refreshing. You know, it's cooling. It hits the mark, doesn't it? You just, you know, your throat's so dry and whew. Have you ever been so dry that your tongue nearly sticks to your mouth and you couldn't even talk properly?
Yeah.
I've been like that sometimes. And you're like, you know, and the word, you can't even say words properly because your mouth is too dry for your tongue to move properly. There's only one way of quenching real thirst, and that is water.
Yeah.
Other people might think of other things, but if someone is dying of thirst in the desert, they don't ask for tea, and they don't ask for coffee, they don't ask even for Coca-Cola or even a nice cold beer. What they were plead for is water, isn't it? They want water. Water is a simple necessity of life, isn't it? Of all life, animals and the rest of the world, the rest of the creation, depend on water to live, don't they? Nobody feeds them pop or whatever they need. They have to have water. What I want to look at now is how God provides water for the thirsty, and much more than that. So my first reading this morning is from Exodus 17. I'm going to read from verse 1 to verse 7. I'm only going to go through these quite quickly because I could easily preach on all of these for quite a long time. But Exodus 17 and verse 1 to 7. This is what it says. Then all the congregation of the children of Israel set out on their journey from the wilderness of Sin according to the commandment of the Lord and camped in Rephidim. But there was no water for the people to drink. Therefore the people contended with Moses and said, "Give us water that we may drink." So Moses said to them, "Why do you contend with me? Why do you tempt the Lord?" And the people thirsted there for water, and the people complained against Moses, and said, "Why is it you have brought us up out of Egypt to kill us and our children and our livestock with thirst?" So Moses cried out to the Lord, saying, "What shall I do with this people? They're almost ready to stone me." And the Lord said to Moses, "Go on before the people and take with you some of the elders of Israel. Also take in your hand your rod with which you struck the river and go. Behold, I will stand before you there on the rock in Horeb, and you shall strike the rock, and water shall come out of it, so that my people may drink." And Moses did so in the sight of the elders of Israel. So he called the name of that place Massah and Meribah, because of the contention of the children of Israel, and because they tempted the Lord, saying, "Is the Lord among us or not?" My comment on the bottom of that is, I'm actually writing on my Bible, "What? No thanks." Mm-hmm. And we'll see as we go through this story. I'm just going to tweet quickly. So the story is, the children of Israel had, as you know, been delivered from the Egyptians. They crossed the Red Sea. They'd seen the mighty Red Sea open for them, walked through on dry land. The Egyptian army destroyed in one fell swoop by God. They'd seen manna from heaven. Now they've got to this stage in their journey, and it says that they're thirsty. Well, if you think about that, a long walk in the hot sun, in the desert, carrying everything that you own, would probably make you thirsty as well, wouldn't it? That's what they were doing, wasn't it? They were moving house, but carrying everything with them, and taking the children and the animals and anything else they've got in the desert. It's not cold in the desert. In verse 1 it says, "But there was no water." None. That means it had gone. Wherever they had gone, there was nothing around they could see. In verse 3 it says, "And the people thirsted there for water." And I can imagine them saying, "I'm not going any further. That's it. We can't go on without water." Because it deliberately says that they thirsted there. You know, they just stayed there and, well, we can't move on without water. It got much worse very quickly. And by verse 4, Moses cries out to God and says, "God, they're almost about to stone me." They were going to stone him, it got that bad. This is the mighty leader that's just read him through the Red Sea, and, you know, through God has brought manna from heaven, and, you know, awesome man of God. "Julian, Gary, get up here, let's stone him." You know, it's like that, isn't it? We can safely say that these people were thirsty, weren't they? Do you think Moses was thirsty?
Yeah.
If there were no water, he hadn't got any either, had he? But he wasn't complaining. But God brings a swift solution with clear instruction and guidance on how to do it. I'm just read you verse 5 and verse 6 again, because there's two important points which I want to bring from this. "And the Lord said to Moses, go on before the people and take with you some of the elders of Israel. Also take in your hand your rod with which you struck the river and go. Behold, I stand before you there on the rock in Horeb, and you shall strike the rock, and water will come out of it, that the people may drink. And Moses did so in the sight of the Lord." Would anybody like to do a bit of rock smiting? I've got a rock here. And if someone wants to come and have a go at smiting it, they're welcome to. I think that no matter how much you hit that rock with that stick,
yeah,
it's not going to produce any water, is it?
Yeah.
It doesn't appear to work, that rock, does it?
Yeah,
no matter how much you smack that rock, there's not going to be any water come out of it, because the only way that there was going to be any miracle is if they did it exactly how God told them to do it, wasn't there? First of all, the point I'd like to make this morning is that Moses had to be involved. Moses had to do something. God could have just gone, and a fountain could have come out of the floor, you know, and drenched all the children of Israel in one go, you know, and they could have all been swimming in pure clean water. God's that big, isn't he? But what God did was, he said to Moses, "Right, you've got to walk in front, you've got to take the priest with you, you know, your elders, and you've got to go to a place that I've told you." So that's the first thing. He had to do something. He had to walk in front. He had to take the elders. He had to take the stick. He had to strike the right rock, didn't he? Yeah, that was a step of faith, wasn't it? You had to have some faith to do that, to believe that God was going to do something. Secondly, how would he know which rock to hit? Does he indiscriminately strike every rock that he passes on the way in the desert? No. God says in verse 6, I'll stand on the rock that you are going to hit. God was going to actually stand on the rock. Now, I don't know how that happened, but in verse 6 he says, behold, I will stand before you there on the rock in Horeb. So God is stood on the rock waiting for him coming. But first Moses had to do what he was told to do, didn't he? And the outcome is the water, whoosh, out the rock as soon as he strikes it. A result. God is in the business of providing water for his thirsty people now as well as then, transforming us from dry barrenness to well-watered trees. And as I said earlier, what I find the most amazing part about this story is that it doesn't say that the people thank God. It doesn't say that the people praise God. And you think if sort of, you know, it just quenched their thirst and there was overwhelming water and it fed the cattle and everybody, that they would at least say, oh, thank you, God. You know, we'll put a bit of a monument here and, you know, this thing thanks to God. But that didn't happen. Similar story, same person, same people, Numbers 20. I'm just going to read from verse 1 to verse 13, but I'm not going to preach on it all. I'm just going to pick a couple of points out of this one, but I need to read it so you can see the difference in the story. Then the children of Israel, the whole congregation, came into the wilderness of Zin in the first month, and the people stayed in Kadesh, and Miriam died there and was buried there. Now there was no water for the congregation, so they gathered together against Moses and Aaron. Does that sound familiar from last story? The people contended with Moses and spoke, saying, if only we had died when our brethren died before the Lord, why have you brought up the assembly of the Lord into the wilderness, that we and our animals should die here? And why have you made us come out of Egypt to bring us to this evil place? It is not a place of grain, or figs, or vines, or pomegranates, nor is there any water to drink. So Moses and Aaron went from the presence of the assembly to the door of the tabernacle of meeting. They fell on their faces, and the glory of God appeared to them. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, take the rod, you and your brother Aaron, gather the congregation together, speak to the rock before their eyes, and it will yield its water. Thus you shall bring water for them out of the rock and give it to drink to the congregation and their animals. So Moses took the rod from before the Lord as he had commanded him. And Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly together before the rock. And he said to them, hear now, you rebels, must we bring water for you out of this rock? Then Moses lifted his hand and struck the rock twice with his rod. And water came out abundantly, and the congregation and the animals drank. Then the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, because you did not believe me to hallow me in the eyes of the children of Israel, therefore you shall not bring this assembly into the land which I have given them. This was the water of Meribah, because the children of Israel contended with the Lord, and he was hallowed among them. Again, no water for the people, so Moses is getting it in the neck again, and Aaron this time, you know, they're both getting it. And the verse where I particularly pulled out here was verse 5. I love verse 5. It's just the children of Israel being sarcastic. And why have you made us come out of Egypt to bring us to this evil place? It is not a place of grain or figs or wine or pomegranates, nor is there any water to drink. Egypt, where they come from, was a place of grain and figs and wine and pomegranates. And he brought them from that place, and they're sort of being very sarcastic in saying, well, we had that there. He brought us into wilderness. We've not even got water to drink, never mind pomegranates and figs and vines and wine. I could imagine that helped the situation immensely. But have we ever said something similar?
Yeah.
Expecting something from someone, or not getting what we expected or what was promised, so off we go. You said you were going to do so and so, so and so. No, you promised. this isn't what you said you're going to do. My next question is, have we ever said that to God? You know, God, this is not what you said you were going to do. This is not how my life was supposed to go. Well, this story shows us something special about God's provision to his thirsty people. And you might not have realized this before, but even though Moses made a mistake, and when people preach on this, the main thing that they seem to pull out of it is that Moses did it wrong. But the main thing that I want to pull out of it this morning is that even though Moses made a mistake, God still provided the refreshment and the transformation for his people that were thirsty. It didn't stop God blessing his people when the leader didn't quite get it right. In verse 7, Moses was told to speak to the rock, wasn't he? He didn't say, go and smack it with your stick again. He just says, speak to the rock and the rock will pour out water. God wanted to do something different. In verse 11, what does Moses do? Moses goes up to the rock and whacks it twice. He'd been told just to speak to it. That was what Moses did wrong. He did it in the wrong, not how God had planned. God still met the need of his people instantly. This should be an encouragement to leaders and pastors and anyone who seeks to do God's work, any of us, that even if we get it wrong, God will still meet the need of his people. God will still bless his people. Would it have been better for Moses just to sit down and not do anything? Or strike the rock? At least by striking the rock and doing something, you know, the water did come forth. God is a transforming God, and God is a thirst-meeting God, and he will do that for his people through whatever means he needs to. The next verse I want to look at is in Isaiah 44, verse 3. And most of these verses that I'm using this morning, I think most of us will have heard before. This one's a fantastic verse about what will happen to thirsty people, thirsty God's people. For I will pour water on him who is thirsty and floods on the dry ground. I will pour my spirit on your descendants and my blessings on your offspring. First of all, this is God saying, I will. When God says, I will, he does. There's no doubt about it. I will pour water on him who is thirsty. Now, if I took what was left of that water in that bottle and poured it over someone's head, I think you'd get quite wet, wouldn't you? I'll not do it, just in case you're worried, but if I put my finger in there and got a drop of water on and went, you probably wouldn't get very wet, would you? Yeah. Just a little splash. But God says that he will pour water on those that are thirsty, not just a little drop, not just a drop of rain, but whoosh, you know, soaked. God can do that. Not a drop, not a cup, but an abundance of water. It says there, let me just read that verse. I will pour water on him who is thirsty and floods on the dry ground. We've had some immense rain, haven't we, this last week. Some nights so heavy that the water was just rushing past the front of our house on the path and at the back. And it must have been 2 inches deep and just going sideways like a river around the house. Floods, not a little drop. Are we thirsting for what God has for us? Because when we do, this is an awesome promise. I will pour water on him who is thirsty. Not someone who's just sat, not bothered whether it rains or not, or bothered whether they're thirsty or not. More than that, as we'll see in a minute. When God pours it out, not only will you be blessed and transformed, but generations of your family to come as well can be blessed and transformed. Because it says at the end of that verse, I will pour out my spirit on your descendants and my blessing on your offspring. The thirsty person, the person that's seeking from God, is quenched with water from God, but it carries on into generations. That's an awesome God, isn't it? That's an awesome blessing. That shows how the drenching of God's blessing comes, you know, in floods that affects generations. Isaiah 61, verse 3, just one verse. Another one that I think you'll know very well. To console those who mourn in Zion, to give them beauty for ashes, the oil of joy for mourning, the garments of praise for the spirits of heaviness, that they may be called trees of righteousness, the planting of the Lord, that he may be glorified. Our God is a God of transformation and a God of refreshing. Just in those three or four things there, we see that God gives beauty for ashes. Ashes are not really any good for anything. If you pick one up, it disintegrates in your hand, and all it leaves is a nasty black mark on your hand. But beauty is something what everyone can see. What a transformation. Joy for mourning. A swap. You know, for people who mourning, God brings joy. Praise instead of heaviness. I'm sure at times we've all felt the spirit of heaviness, or maybe even the heaviness of sickness upon our lives. I thought, I don't feel like praising this morning. You know, I don't feel like singing tonight. You know, I don't even want to go to church tonight because, you know, I'm feeling rough. And then you go anyway, and then the praise starts. And then God gives us praise instead of that heaviness. He takes it away. The other thing that's important here, it says that it gives us beauty for ashes, the oil of joy for mourning, the garments of praise for the spirit of heaviness, that they may be called trees of righteousness, the planting of the Lord. A feeling of being planted and rooted instead of wandering about, you know, and being loose and not quite fitting properly. Do you need any of these things from God this morning? Because he loves to pour out his grace upon us. Simple description of grace is unearned favour. You know, God just gives it us anyway, whether we deserve it or not. God still poured out the water from the rock, even though Moses did it wrong. God says in his word that he has plans to prosper us, not to harm us, you know, to pour out his blessings upon us. Another one which you'll know well, I'm not going to do many more. Psalm 1, verse 1 to verse 3. Blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor stands in the path of sinners, nor sits in the seat of the scornful. But his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law he meditates day and night. Listen to this one carefully. He shall be like a tree planted by the rivers of water, that brings forth its fruit in its season, whose leaf also shall not wither, and whatsoever he does shall prosper. That's a fantastic verse, isn't it? What a promise. God not only waters us with his blessings, with his spirit, but he also plants us in strategic places where we can grow by rivers. Rivers of what? Rivers of blessing, rivers of God's power, rivers of encouragement. Something what you might not realize there is that it says, let me find it again, he shall be like a tree planted by the rivers of water. Not just say, doesn't say one river, it says rivers of water. There are many streams that flow from God, you know, many rivers. If you had planted a tree by one river, what would happen if the river got diverted or the river dried up? Wouldn't be much use, wouldn't it? But it says rivers because there's a constant supply from God from all directions of rivers of blessing. You can imagine if a tree was planted in the V of land between two rivers, then it would flourish, wouldn't it? It would grow. If you remember when I was talking about Egypt and the special land that the king kept for himself, it was between two rivers. and everything that would grow there flourished. That's what this is talking about, that when God blesses us, when God plants us, he puts us in places where streams of blessing are surrounding us. You know, they're coming from all directions. That's what God wants to do for those who are thirsty for his work and will. Refresh, transform, excuse me, and root us in the right place so that in season that we can bear spiritual fruit. Yeah? And there is seasons with God of blessings and seasons of quietness and seasons of refreshing. The last verse that I'm going to bring this morning is from Psalm 92. I'm going to read from verse 12 to verse 15. The righteous shall flourish like a palm tree. He shall grow like a cedar in Lebanon. Those who are planted in the house of the Lord shall flourish in the courts of our God. They shall still bear fruit in old age. They shall be fresh and flourishing to declare that the Lord is upright. He is my rock, and there is no unrighteousness in him. I love the word that is used here to describe how God affects his people that are thirsty for him. He says that they shall, have you noticed it? He says it three times, flourish. He says they shall flourish like a palm tree. Well, palm trees can flourish even in the desert, you know, because they find a little bit of water. That's in verse 12. In verse 13, it says that they will flourish in God's court. That means when we're in the house of God, when we're a people together, that God will cause us to flourish there when we're doing his will and work. In verse 14, if anybody thinks they've got an excuse this morning, you're wrong, because in verse 14 it says, they will be fresh and flourish even in their old age. Yeah. So, anyone who's thinking of retiring or whatever, no way. So does it matter really if we're young or old to God's service? Obviously not, does it? Because of what this verse says. Does it matter if we are thirsty for God's will and way and work in our lives? Yes, it does. Everything that happened in these verses is because of a thirst, because of a need. If we're not thirsty, then we won't ask for refreshment, will we? If you're content as we are, then you don't really need a drink. If we're not getting refreshed, then we're not getting transformed either, are we? We're not getting changed. We're not getting refreshed. We won't be planted in the right place. We won't be doing the right thing for God. The ultimate thing of not being refreshed by God is that, and continually being thirsty, is that we won't produce fruit. The reason that bush out there with all the blackberries on produces so much fruit is because it's getting water from somewhere. You know, if that water stopped, then there won't be any fruit on that next year. That's just like us. If we're not being refreshed by God and imparting his spiritual power upon us and his spiritual water, then we won't produce fruit in the season when we should produce fruit. You know, when God says this is the time, but you're not asking. God says, I will pour water on him who is thirsty. We were never meant to run around seeking spiritual experiences by whacking every rock that we can find. By that I mean that we were never meant to run from one church to another, you know, run from one even country to another seeking God's blessing, because God can bless us just right where we stand. God can bless us as much on our knees in our bedroom by ourselves as he can in any massive meeting or convention or any church or wherever something is happening. It doesn't matter, because God says, I will pour water on them that are thirsty. If we're not being refreshed, then it's because we're not thirsty. That's the problem. What we are, we will be times when we are thirsty.
Yeah.
And the answer to that is really what the children of Israel did and what Moses did. We've got to ask God, you know, for that refreshing. We've got to ask God for that water that only He can give. What I thought we might do this morning, just for a moment or two, is that we'll just have a moment and in prayer. And if people want to, if you think there's, I don't know, maybe some barren area or some dryness in our Christian lives, then we can, you know, just ask God to sort that out. We can just, before God, you don't even have to do anything special, you know what I mean? God is here. So if you have a need this morning, you know, and we can come out and be prayed for, or you can just stay where you are or wherever, and God will pour out His, right? Pat wants prayer. So if anybody else, then feel free to come out and we'll pray with you, or let's just have a time now where, you know, a time of refreshing, where we ask God, where we say, God, yeah, we are thirsty, Lord. If you want to pray or bring a reading, then feel free at this time. Kabarashin.